Radio Krishna presents Stories from the Mahabharata, or the History of Greater India.
Dronacharya, the great and powerful Brahmin, fully skilled in all the sciences of weaponry, was considered the most fit person to become the teacher of both the Pandava and Kaurava royal families. So he was received with special honor and employed to instruct the princes in the use of arms. Drona later used his pupils as a means of settling his ancient dispute with King Draupada, who, due to pride, had cruelly mistreated Dronacharya.
As soon as the Kauravas and Pandavas had acquired mastery in the science of arms, Drona sent Karna and Duryodhana of the Kurus to seize Draupada and bring him alive, in discharge of the duty they owed to him as their master. They went as ordered by him, but could not accomplish their task. Then the master sent forth Arjuna of the Pandavas on the same errand. He defeated Draupada in battle and brought him and his ministers captive to Drona. Then Drona smilingly addressed Draupada.
Great king, don't be afraid for your life. In our boyhood we were companions, but you were pleased to forget it and dishonor me. You told me that a king alone could be a friend to a king. Now I am a king, having conquered your kingdom. Still, I seek to regain my friendship with you, and so I generously give you half of your kingdom back, which has become mine by conquest. Your creed is that friendship is possible only between equals, and we shall now be equals, each owning one half of your kingdom.
Drona thought this sufficient revenge for the insult he had suffered, set Draupada at liberty, and treated him with honor.
Draupada's pride was thus humbled, but since hate is never extinguished by retaliation, and few things are harder to bear than the pangs of wounded vanity, hatred of Drona and a wish to be revenged on him became the ruling passion of Draupada's life.
The king performed great austerities, underwent fasts, and conducted sacrifices in order to win the gratified gods to bless him with a son who would slay Drona and a daughter who should wed Arjuna. His efforts were crowned with success with the birth of Drishtadyumna, who commanded the Pandava army at Kurukshetra and, helped by a strange combination of circumstances, slew the otherwise unconquerable Drona, the birth of Draupadi, the consort of the Pandavas. The Pandavas, the great heroes of the Mahabharata, manifested all ideal characteristics and were admired by all. The jealousy of the evil Duryodhana began to grow at the sight of the physical strength of Bhima and the dexterity of Arjuna of the Pandavas. Karna and Sakuni became Duryodhana's evil counselors in planning wily stratagems. As for poor Dhritarashtra, his blind father, he was a wise man, no doubt, and he also loved his brother's sons, but he was weak of will and dotingly attached to his own children. For his children's sake, the worse became the better reason, and he would sometimes even knowingly follow the wrong path. Duryodhan sought in various ways to kill the Pandavas. It was by means of secret help rendered by Vidura, who wanted to save the family from a great sin, that the Pandavas escaped with their lives. One unforgivable offense of the Pandavas in the eyes of Duryodhan was that the people of the city used to praise them openly and declare that Yudhisthira alone was fit to be the king. They would flock together and talk and argue.
Dhritarashtra could never be king, for he was born blind. It's not proper that he should now hold the kingdom in his hands.
Bhishma cannot be king either, because he is devoted to truth and to his vow that he would not be king.
Hence, Yudhisthira alone should be crowned as king. He alone can rule the Kuru race and the kingdom with justice.
Thus people talked everywhere. These words were poison to Duryodhan's ears and made him writhe and burn with jealousy. He went to Dhritarashtra and complained bitterly of the public talk.
Father, the citizens babble irrelevant nonsense. They have no respect even for such venerable persons as Bhishma and yourself. They say that Yudhisthira should be immediately crowned king. This would bring disaster on us. You were set aside because of your blindness, and your brother became the king. Why, if Yudhisthira is to succeed his father, where do we fit in? What chance do our children have? After Yudhisthira, his son, and his son's sons, and then his son will be the kings. We will seek into poor relations, dependent on them, even for our food. I'd rather live in hell than be reduced to that circumstance.
At these words, Dhritarashtra began to think and said,
Son, what you say is true. Still, Yudhisthira will not stray from the path of virtue. He loves everybody. He has truly inherited all the excellent virtues of his deceased father. People praise him and will support him. And all the ministers of the state and commanders of armies, to whom Pandu had endeared himself by his nobility of character, will surely support Yudhisthira. As for the people, they idolize the Pandavas. I don't think we can oppose them with any chance of success. If we do injustice, the citizens will rise in rebellion and either kill us or expel us. We will only cover ourselves with ignominy.
Duryodhan replied,
Your fears are baseless. Bhishma will at worst be neutral, while Ashwatthama is devoted to me, which means that his father Drona and uncle Kripa will also be on our side. Vidura can't openly oppose us, for, if no other reason, because he hasn't got the strength. Send the Pandavas immediately to Varanavata. I tell you the solemn truth that my cup of suffering is full and I can bear no more. It pierces my heart and renders me sleepless and makes my life a torment. After sending the Pandavas to Varanavata, we shall try to strengthen our party.
Later, some politicians were prevailed upon to join Duryodhana's party and advise the king in the matter. Kanika, the minister of Saukuni, was their leader.
O king, guard yourselves against the sons of Pandu, for their goodness and influence are a menace to you and yours. The Pandavas are the sons of your brother, but the nearer the kin, the closer and deadlier the danger. They are very strong.
Sakuni's minister continued,
Don't be angry with me if I say that a king should be mighty in action as well as name, for nobody will believe in strength which is never displayed. State affairs should be kept secret, and the earliest indication to the public of a wise plan should be its execution. Also, evils must be eradicated promptly, for a thorn which has been allowed to remain in the body may cause a festering wound. Powerful enemies should be destroyed, and even a weak foe should not be neglected, since a mere spark, if overlooked, may cause a huge forest fire. A strong enemy should be destroyed by means of a stratagem, and it would be folly to show mercy to him. O king, guard yourself against the sons of Pandu. They are very powerful.
Duryodhan told Dhritarashtra of his success in securing adherents.
Father, I have bought the goodwill of the king's attendants with gifts of wealth and honor. I have won over his ministers to our cause. If you will adroitly prevail upon the Pandavas to go to Varnavata, the city and the whole kingdom will take our side. They haven't got a friend left here. Once the kingdom has become ours, there will be no power for harm left in them, and it may even be possible then to let them come back.
When many began to say what he himself wished to believe, Dhritarashtra's mind was shaken, and he yielded to his son's counsels. It only remained to give effect to the plot. The ministers began to praise the beauty of Varanavat in the hearing of the Pandavas, and made mention of the fact that a great festival in honor of Shiva would be conducted there, with all pomp and splendor. The unsuspecting Pandavas were easily persuaded, especially when Dhritarashtra also told them in tones of great affection that they should certainly go there and witness the festivities, not only because they were worth seeing, but because the people of that place were very eager to welcome them. The Pandavas took leave of Bhishma and the other elders and went to Varanavata. Duryodhan was elated. He plotted with Sakuni and Karna.
Let's take this opportunity now to kill Kunti and her sons while they're at Varnavata. Let's send for Parochan, our minister, and give him secret instructions. I'm sure that he will carry them out very faithfully.
Before the Pandavas proceeded to Varanavata, Purochana, true to his instructions, hastened to the spot well in advance and had a beautiful palace built for their reception.
Combustible materials like jute, lac, ghee, oil, and fat were used in the construction of the palace. The materials for the plastering of the walls were also inflammable. He skillfully filled up various parts of the building with dry things which would catch fire easily, and had inviting seats and bedsteads disposed at the most combustible places.
Every convenience was furnished for the Pandavas to dwell in the city without fear until the palace was built. When the Pandavas had settled down in the wax house, the idea was to set fire to it at night when they were sound asleep. The ostentatious love and solicitude with which the Pandavas had been received and treated would obviate all suspicion, and the fire would be taken as a sad cause of pure accident. No one would dream of blaming the Kauravas. After taking reverential leave of the elders and embracing their comrades, the Pandavas proceeded to Varanavata. The citizens accompanied them a part of the way and returned unwillingly to their own city. Vidura pointedly warned Yudhisthira in words intelligible only to the prince.
He alone will escape from danger who forestalls the intentions of an astute enemy. There are weapons sharper than those made of steel. And the wise man who would escape destruction must know the means to guard against them. The conflagration that devastates a forest cannot hurt a rat which shelters itself in a hole, or a porcupine which burrows in the earth. The wise man knows his bearings by looking at the stars.
This was meant to indicate to Yudhisthira and to him alone Duryodhan's hideous plot and the means of escape from danger. Yudhisthira answered that he had grasped Vidura's meaning and later he communicated it to his mother Kunti. Though they had started on their journey in a sunshine of joy, they now proceeded in a dark cloud of sorrow and anxiety.
The people of Varnavata were very happy to learn of the coming of the Pandavas to their city, and they welcomed them. After a brief stay in other houses, while the palace specially meant for them was being got ready, they moved into it under Purochana's guidance. It was named Shivam, which means prosperity, and that was the name which, in ghastly irony, was given to the death trap.
Yudhisthira diligently examined the whole place, bearing in mind Vidura's warning, and verified that the building was without a shadow of a doubt constructed with combustible materials. Yudhisthira told Bhima,
"Bhima, though we know very well that the palace is a trap of death, we should not make Purochana suspect that we know his plot. We should get away at the right moment, but escape would be difficult if we gave room for any suspicion."
So they stayed in that house to all appearance free from care. Meanwhile, Vidura had sent an expert miner who met them in secret and said,
"My password is the veiled warning Vidura gave you. I have been sent to help you for your protection."
Thenceforward, the miner worked for many days in secret, unknown to Purochana, and completed a subterranean tunnel from the wax house, right under and across the walls and the moat which ran round the precincts. Purochana had his quarters at the gateway of the palace. The Pandavas kept armed vigil during night, but by day they used to go out hunting in the forest, to all appearance bent on pleasure, but really to make themselves familiar with the forest paths. As has already been said, they carefully kept to themselves the knowledge of the wicked plot against their lives. On his side, Purochana, anxious to lull all suspicion and make the murderous fire seem an accident, waited fully a year before putting the plot into effect.
At last, Purochana felt he had waited long enough, and the watchful Yudhisthira, knowing that the fated moment had arrived, called his brothers together and told them that then or never was the time for them to escape. Kunti Devi arranged a sumptuous feast for the attendants that day. Her idea was to lull them to well-fed sleep at night.
At midnight, Bhima set fire to the palace in several places. Kunti Devi and the Pandava brothers hurried out through the subterranean passage, groping their way out in the darkness. Presently, there was a roaring fire all over the palace, and a fast, swelling crowd of frightened citizens all around in loud and helpless lamentation. Some bustled aimlessly in futile efforts to put out the conflagration, and all joined in the cry,
"Alas, alas, this is surely Duryodhana's evil work, and he's killing the sinless Pandavas."
The palace was reduced to ashes. Purochana's residence was enveloped in flames before he could escape, and he fell an unpitied victim to his own wicked plot. The people of Varanavat sent the following message to Hastinapur.
"The palace which was the abode of the Pandavas has burnt down, and no one in it escaped alive."
Vyas has beautifully described the then mental state of the father Dhritarashtra.
"Just as the water of a deep pool is cool at the bottom and warm on the surface, so the heart of Dhritarashtra was at once warm with joy and chilled with sorrow."
Dhritarashtra and his sons cast off their royal garments in a token of mourning for the Pandavas, whom they believed consumed in the fire. They dressed themselves in simple garments, as became sorrowful kinsmen, and went to the river and performed the propitiatory funeral rites. No outward show of heartbroken bereavement was omitted.
it was noticed by some that Vidur was not so overcome by sorrow as the others, and this was attributed to his philosophical bent of mind. But the real reason was that he knew that the Pandavas had escaped to safety. When he looked sad, he was in fact following with his mind's eye the weary wanderings of the Pandavas. Seeing that, Bhisma was sunk in sorrow. Vidura secretly comforted him by revealing to him the story of their successful escape.
Bhima saw that his mother and brothers were exhausted by their nightly vigils, as well as by fear and anxiety. He therefore carried his mother on his shoulders and took his younger brother Nakula and his other brother Sahadev on his hips, supporting Yudhisthira and Arjuna with his two hands. Thus, heavily laden, he strode effortlessly like a lordly elephant, forcing his way through the forest paths and pushing aside the shrubs and trees that obstructed him. When they reached the Ganges River, there was a boat ready for them in charge of a boatman who knew their secret.
They crossed the river in the darkness, and entering a mighty forest, they went on all night in darkness that wrapped them like a shroud, and in a silence broken hideously by the frightful noises of wild animals.
At last, quite forlorn by toil, they sat down, unable to bear the pangs of thirst and overcome by the drowsiness of sheer fatigue. Their mother Kunti said,
"I do not care even if the sons of Dhritarashtra are here to seize me. I must lie down and rest myself."
She forthwith laid herself down and immediately was sunk in sleep. Bhima forced his way about the tangled forest in search of water in darkness, and finding a pool, he wetted his upper garment, made cups of lotus leaves, and brought water to his mother and brothers who were perishing from thirst. Then, while the others slept in merciful forgetfulness of their woes, Bhima alone sat awake, absorbed in deep thought.
"Do not the plants and the creepers of the forest mutually help each other and live in peace? Why should the wicked Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana try to injure us in these ways?"
Sinless himself, Bhima could not understand the springs of sinfulness in others and was lost in grief.
The Pandavas trudged on, suffering many hardships and overcoming many dangers. Part of the way, they would carry their mother to make better speed. Sometimes, tired beyond even heroic endurance, they would pause and rest. Sometimes, full of life and the glorious strength of youth, they would race ahead with each other.
They met the sage Bhagavan Vyas on the way. All of them bowed before him and received encouragement and wise counsel from him. When Kunti told him of their sorrows that had befallen them, Vyas consoled her with these words:
"No virtuous man is strong enough to live in virtue at all times, nor is any sinner bad enough to exist in one welter of sin. Life is a tangled web, and there is no one in the world who has not done both good and evil. Each and every one has to bear the consequence of his actions. Do not give way to sorrow."
Then they put on the garb of Brahmins, as advised by Vyas, went to the city of Ekachakra, and stayed there in a Brahmin's house, waiting for better days.
You've been listening to Stories from the Mahabharata, the celebrated history of Greater India. compiled by the great sage Vyas many thousands of years ago, Mahabharata is written in the Sanskrit language in verse form and is here adapted for radio and brought to you by Radio Krishna. Tune in again for our next presentation of Stories from the Mahabharata.